So basically, these big hacks are important. It's crucial that we defend against them. But at the same time, I want to talk a little bit about the less sophisticated misuse that causes a lot of problems. We've seen damage to a lot of media properties. Even on a small scale, we've seen situations where a leak can even cause something to be canceled. We did have a few years ago a piece of content that leaked out that was sort of a spoiler to a documentary that actually resulted in the cancellation of a feature. I think that's too extreme, but you guys are familiar with the damage this causes. There's also a huge cost of cleanup for, it impacts all of our customers who get into a scenario where they're doing an instant response, it affects us too. So I'm gonna talk about some mundane leak scenarios. This is based on recent history, but also a longer history of what we've observed as the most common leak sources for our customers, and I want to share some of our recent focus on improving detection and response to those things, where we're actually have been making some investment. So when a leak happens, let's talk about some of the leak-related questions. First thing, what's the content? What actually was leaked? Is it cultish or nerdy? Does it have this big reveal? Because this is some of the stuff that we notice will put content at risk. Another thing is, have you been marketing it really well? Because if you have, there's a good chance that people want to see it. Someone likes it, thinks that everyone has to see this thing right away, and we find ourselves in this scenario. It's important to consider this when you look at what controls you put on your content as you share it. Second, what controls did we use when we shared it? Did we lower our guard? This happens a lot. Sometimes we lowered a guard by accident, sometimes we lowered our guard on purpose. Not me, but I mean, the royal we, collectively, all of us, were the more inclusive we, how did you guys share it, using our platform or another platform? And if we did lower our guard, what's the purpose of lowering the guard? Which usually comes down to, who are we making it easy for? Are we lowering our guard because it's an executive who can't be troubled to enter a password? Is it that we're trying to encourage someone to come in and we're trying to reduce friction? And all of those things are valid. So a little tangent here, I want to talk about the audience for pre-release sharing in the context of this talk. Notably, it's press reviewers. That we have this platform called screeners.com where the main audience is press reviewers, but also we have VPs of VIPs of various kinds, like people who are involved in the production, maybe writers, directors, actors, etc. We have external team members, people that are somehow helping with the production or post-production or marketing. We have internal team that are doing the sharing. And what that means is that there's all kinds of people who have access to this stuff. The people who have access is just a slice of the general population with everything that entails in terms of technology capability and security awareness. Just a quick segue on our products. I mentioned we have screeners.com as a press screening platform. The system is relatively young. It's 2 years old. SafeStream, which is 3 or 4 years old, is a real-time watermarking service and API that underlies screeners and puts a watermark on the content that we play there. We also have some additional products, MediaCello, which is content sharing workflows, and a lightweight CloudDAM, and WireDrive, which enables presentation workflows and has a content library, and both of those that we're rewriting and migrating into this new product called Shift. You can come by our demo, see our booth south lower, just past the stairs. We'll give you a demo. I'm talking about screeners.com today, but everything I say here as I'm presenting to you how we think about threats is informed by all of this other stuff that we look at. Like I said, up almost a couple decades of experience across those platforms. So back to the leak-related questions. How did the authorized user lose custody? And this one is really key. Was it shared on purpose? Again, on purpose, by accident, or even without their knowledge? That's an important consideration. Authorized users, we find, don't usually pirate it directly. Sometimes they share it on purpose. And that is the key. We call this oversharing, which brings me to threat number one, oversharing. An authorized user intentionally shares access with an unauthorized user. So let me just walk you through this real quick. We have a publicist who probably works for studio, content creator, content owner. Does an authorized share to a reviewer who probably works for a newspaper, maybe a magazine, maybe some kind of a TV thing where they're gonna review the show. That person makes an unauthorized share to someone that they trust or they think that they trust. And already, we're, you know, this is the point at which we call it oversharing. The risk is, this probably happens from time to time, we try to find these things, but there's a risk that then they leak it to someone who has no loyalty to any of us and just leaks out the content. We've seen this in a variety of combinations, and we have a nickname for it. We call it the lover threat model. And usually it's because there's some kind of personal relationships going on this bottom row, whether it's the blue to the yellow to the red, and sometimes there's a romantic relationship there or similar, although that's not always the case. So one of the things we want to look at is just how did this yellow line happen? How did they even get the share unauthorized? How are they even able to share it? Can we unplug that? The first answer is they give them the password. Maybe I'll change the password later. And can I just say, once again, let's just eliminate passwords, which we've done on screeners. So we don't even offer login via passwords to anybody anymore. They can forward emails. It's hard to prevent that. They can download and rip the file themselves and share it out. We have to try to unplug that and short-circuit that one. So when we look at the controls that we have in place now, and then our planning on our roadmap going forward, we're looking at, first of all, we only offer login to the system on screeners.com via magic link, which is an email verification process. There's no password to forward or share with anybody. So that's a start. We have an MFA requirement. It's settable by content, but a lot of times the content owner won't turn it on because it's additional friction. And you know, MFA is a pain and people lose their phones and it's a piece of friction, right? We also have a visible watermark that raises paranoia, at least on behalf of the blue person, maybe the yellow person, depending on who they are. We have a forensic watermark that allows us to even do the analysis to come back to you and say, like, this is what we're seeing happening in the industry. We're working on DRM. You can see it's like kind of grayed out a little bit because we're working on adding DRM right now that will certainly complicate the downloading and ripping side of this, although it may not complicate the access issues. And then we have, I recommend that all of you guys consider doing NDAs and other contracts with the reviewer and train them how not to share this. We even heard from when we introduced this magic link, somebody said to us, I guess I won't be able to share these screeners with my wife anymore. And we said, yeah, she's going to have to sit beside you on the couch to watch it. Like, that's how it's going to be. Now, look at the red line. Some of these controls work there, too. It's hard to share it. It's hard to forward the link, right? MFA could unplug this if it's turned on. The watermark has the visible watermark has a different impact here, which is they might decide they have to blur it out to save the people that they're connected to if they do, in fact, have some loyalty there. Obviously, the forensic watermark to track it down. DRM can also help if they're the ones who rip it. An NDA won't help you with this person who has no loyalty. So that's basically what that threat model entails, what we're looking at adding now. So let's go on to threat number two, stored credentials. This one has actually gotten worse recently. This is where an unauthorized user has standing access or can gain standing access to an authorized user's credentials. This is more common than we realized when we got into it, and again, I'll give you a quick example. A publicist doesn't authorize share to the reviewer, possibly unbeknownst to them, or they might not really remember, there's this secondary device in play. And that device somehow has access to the content directly or indirectly through their email, or it's been registered and it's kind of sitting around, and now there's someone who knows how to get into that device, whether it's a family, a friend, an acquaintance, someone who has access to that device. And then they leak it. We call this the stale iPad. We actually saw one where it was literally just a stale iPad, and we ask ourselves, you know, how does this device even still have access? Well, it's passwords. The devices save the passwords. People reuse passwords. People share passwords. Family and friends know people's 4 or 6-digit passcode pins and they know their password habits. Raise your hand if you are the only human that can access your phone. Congratulations. Those of you who are raising your hand, you are the 3 sigma away from the mean rarefied bell curve of security. Most people, there's someone in their life who can get into their phone. And we can't change any of that. We can't change these people's behavior and we can't even try to. So instead, let's eliminate passwords, which, like I said, we did. We can't eliminate passwords to their email and all these other things. So let's look at what controls we have in place now and what we're planning. So magic link login means that there's no password to store. At least there's no password on our account to store. There might be a password in an email system. That's something we have to watch out for. I'll come to that in a minute. MFA requirement, again, would be really good, provided that the MFA isn't also registered on that same device, which we do see and can happen. The important thing here is that if we prefer to do a device registration rather than log in every time with the password. Device registration, but we have to make sure that that device registration expires in a matter of days or weeks, because otherwise it gets stale and it still has access and they can get in there. Then we look at the actual leak line. Again, visible watermark might remind this person in the middle whose iPad this belongs to, and they might get cold feet, which is the idea. It also increases the anonymization work, because they might decide they have to blur out that watermark or pixelate it out or something like that. Forensic watermark so that we can even track this and know what happened. And then DRM to complicate the ripping, because ultimately the way they're going to publish this is they're going to try to rip it out. And we're working on DRM in our 2019 roadmap to start to close that hole. Threat number three, and this is my third one. This is top three presentation. Account compromise, and by this we mean email. So an unauthorized user compromises the email account of an authorized user. Basically, same example, publicist shares to a reviewer, there's some email attacker who has no loyalty to this person, they phished them maybe, or otherwise pwned their email, and we call this, you've got pwned. This is really pretty common. It's getting a little less frequent now that there's the general user base across our industry or in general is becoming more aware of the controls that are available. Today's best available control against this is multi-factor. As I mentioned earlier, multi-factor is kind of a pain. It's this whole other thing that you have to do. So we're really looking here at biometrics. Touch ID and Face ID that recognize you, face unlock on Android or the equivalent fingerprint scanner on Android. These are really hard to share widely beyond your family. You can roll a family member's fingerprint, you can roll a second face, but you're not gonna probably, it's really hard for an external attacker to get at those things. It's really hard to steal. The availability for this technology varies. It's ahead on mobile, some laptops have it. The quality of this varies. We've seen that some can be defeated by like waving a photo in front of the camera. But iOS is ahead here and has a pretty strong product, so we're definitely looking at this to potentially control on iOS devices and maybe on Macs, and we're kind of waiting for the rest of the industry to catch up. And then there's another one that has kind of entered in and we're really excited about, which is the physical factor. So a YubiKey with the U2F standard. And basically what this is a, you know, a USB device that you actually plug into your laptop or maybe your phone, and there's some variations on that, but there's always a physical factor to it. It's really hard to share beyond sharing a device. It's extremely hard to steal. I mean, you could physically steal it, but you can't exfiltrate this stuff. The problem here is that the availability of this varies, and on this one, iOS is behind. So the uptake for our industry is that we're thinking we probably have to do both. We'll do the biometrics where it's available, especially on mobile devices and very personal devices, and we'll probably do a physical factor for everything else. So we're working on both of those. So here's, when I break down the controls we have against this account compromise threat, it basically comes like this. MFA requirement. If you really don't want to lose it, you're going to have to turn on MFA, and we're all going to have to deal with the support requirements of getting those used, you know, holding their hand to go through MFA. Second, we offer time-based one-time password, so-called Google Authenticator type, multi-factor right now, it's working fine. We're looking to add U2F as the availability of that increases on the browsers and devices we're using. We're looking at biometrics, again, like I mentioned, iOS first, because we know it's really good, really well supported there and has a high quality. And because that email attacker, after they gain access, is probably gonna try to rip it, even if we can't prevent them getting in, we might be able to complicate their ripping task by getting DRM on there. There's another thing I'd like to mention that we added this year, or over the summer, and that is anomalous activity monitoring. We have a little cute little internal code name for this, but basically what we're looking for is we're doing activity monitoring on people who have too many devices, too many locations. They're accessing the system or content from odd locations, whatever that means given their normal use pattern. Simultaneous viewing from multiple devices, which is a dead giveaway that somebody's sharing something. They're watching too much content. you can't watch more than 24 hours of content a day. Some of these recappers are really, really active. They still can't do that many hours of content in a single day. We also see people watching the same content twice from two devices, not at the same time, but just you watched episode 1 through 10, and then I watched episode 1 through 10 on the same account. And we're trying to grow this list and use this as a general compensating control. It's working pretty well. It's not perfect, and we'd like to add all those other controls in there too, but right now that's the best available thing that we found in order to control against this. And that's what I got. Thank you, everybody.
Alex, thanks so much. Thank you. I think the panelists for the next session will come up and join me on stage. We're going to